Welcome everybody to Parashat Tazria. Our learning today is sponsored by Adam and Anna Amsalem in honor of their parents, Kenny and Wilma Ashendorf and Michelle Dome, and their beautiful children, Stella and Samuel. I'd also like to dedicate our learning today to in honor of the upcoming yahrzeit of my mother-in-law, Geras Bat Rachel Aleha Shalom. She was a beautiful woman inside and out. And with that, let's get started. I want to back up for a second. This week is Parashat Tazria, but last week in Parashat Shemini, we started to unpack this understanding of things that seem like impurities. For instance, if a person is in a state of mourning and they are in an impure state, it really is an opportunity to reach wholeness and to reach healing. So I think where the Torah is going to take us this week in Parashat Tazria, we're going to talk about the woman who gives birth, and then about all of these skin ailments. It's not pretty and it's not pleasant, but I think the Torah is here to give us a very applicable message for us today. So if we start right at the beginning in Parashat Tazria, Hashem speaks to Moshe Lemor, and he says, speak to Bnei Israel, saying, Isha ki Tazria. If a woman were to, the word zera means a seed, were to reproduce, were to give birth, ve'yalda zachar, and she gives birth to a boy, ve'tam'a shiv'at yamim, she will become or be impure for 7 days. Kimei nidat dota titameh. It's as if she is the same type, I would guess, of impurity as she would have during her, again, I'm trying to keep it a little bit clean, but whatever, she's gonna be in a state of impurity. The point I want to make here is even more important, is a woman giving birth, we would think, is a very natural, beautiful occurrence. We would think that it's something that is the greatest accomplishment for a woman. And here they're already telling us, they're using words like tum'ah, titameh, she's going to be impure. And we have to ask ourselves the question, and that is the impurity something that is the same, in the same realm of the impurities that we've learned last week, which are an opportunity or a means through which we reach wholeness and healing. Let's read the next verse and see what it says. It says, and on the eighth day, because we're talking about that child also that was born, that boy child, that child is going to get a Brit Milah. Now, for you and me, we know that Brit Milah on the eighth day has already been taught to us. We learned this all the way back with Avraham Avinu, when he was instructed to circumcise himself, his children. This is not something new to us. There's a reason that the circumcision law is reinserted here, but I want to give you the third verse and then we'll start to put things together. After the 7 days comes the eighth day, sounding a little bit like last week's Shemini. This eighth day is really the first day of a subsequent 33-day period. Ushloshim yom ushloshet yamim. For 33 days, she's going to sit in deme tahara. All of a sudden, those bloods that were called impure in verse 2 become these deme tahara, these bloods of purity in day 4, in verse 4. This is a very important thing for us. If we are tracking the way the Torah views our physical impurities or our states of not being tahor, we're going from tameh to tahor, there's something very unusual taking place here. When she gives birth, for the first 7 days, she's impure. But then the subsequent 33 days, all of a sudden, the Torah is saying, guess what? The way that we're going to describe her blood is by saying tahor, that it is something that is purity. They're calling even the days at the end of that pasuk, even those 33 days, yemeh tahara, the days of her purity. Now we know that during these 33 days, it says very clearly, lo tavo, ve'la mikdash lo tavo. A woman cannot enter the holy sanctuary for those 33 days. So we would think, because she can't enter the sanctuary for 33 days, it's because she's in a state of impurity. But yet it takes the trouble to label that time and that woman and her status, and using this word, tahora. There is something very pure about it. And I think it's the point that we're going to be making today across the board. We started this when we said last week that the mourner, in their state of impurity, they stand when they get their clothing ripped for them, because it's an understanding that even though we're at a time where we're sitting on the floor, it's called Shiva, we sit for 7 days, and we have people attend to us and bring food for us, and we don't do anything ourselves because we are now debilitated and we're diminished and maybe even depressed or feeling incapable of doing a lot of things. At the same time, it is an opportunity for growth. We use the example of the cocoon, of the caterpillar, of when there's a tear, when the tearing happens, it's an opportunity for new growth. And maybe I'll use a new word for today, not a new word, we all know it. Maybe it's an opportunity for us to reinvent ourselves. Why do I say it in this way? It's because the first 7 days that a woman, after she gives birth, there is one specific thing happening. And there is a sense of the woman thought she was whole. She was carrying life inside of her. And now that life that inside of her, that was inside of her, has left a void. And so for the first 7 days, that shedding of that blood is associated with that which has departed from her. But the next 33 days, those are days of reparation. Those are days where she is now reinventing herself. What is it about the mother who gives birth? And it's 33 days for a boy, but it's 66 days for a girl. A girl is called a nekeva. A nekev is like a hole or a void or a vacuum. And some commentaries say beautifully that the 66 days represent the 33 of her own and 33 of that baby girl who left her, who also has a womb, who also has potential for life. There are some beautiful writings on this concept. But for us, if we want to talk about tameh and tahor, pure and impure, and we want to talk about the first 7 days being attached to loss, but the next 33 days being attached to rebuilding, to redefining, to reinventing, we see those 33 days as the body in repair. For us, again, maybe a good example would be, we just saw the solar eclipse. Just on Monday, it was a big deal. Everybody bought their glasses and went to wherever they can go and see whatever they can see. What was taking place, and I just want to comment how magnificent Hashem's world is, that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the month that Hashem says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, this month is for you, the head of the months. This month, and what is a month? Our months go by the moon. The Chodesh is the moon. This moon for you is the new moon. The rest of the world, they go by the sun. Ra, like Ramses. Ra is the sun, or the sun god, or the other nations, which would use their calendars, measure time by the sun. We, the Jewish people, measure time with the moon. And this moon is going to be for us. This one now, the Rosh Chodesh that we just had, this is the first of our months. And by this month specifically, having the sun be eclipsed by the moon, for me, it was nothing short of God saying, I know the sun is big, and I know the sun is great, and I know the sun is visible, and I know that it looks like the sun is the Ma'or HaGadol, the one that's in charge. But don't you fret, B'nai Israel. I'm standing right here with you, and I'm going to send you a sign. And the sign is going to be that now, when we most need to see that the Jewish people, the ones who go by the moon, that we are going to eclipse the sun. That our symbol of the moon is going to totally take away, or totally block out, or totally be in a prominent state, specifically this month, this Nisan, where it's a time for the redemption of the Jewish people and the time for us to be the ones who are going to shine. Now, with this concept, this idea, I brought the moon as an example, because the woman who's birthing, who's pregnant, is also very much compared to the moon. Her cycle, her waxing, her waning. At certain times, the woman might seem or feel diminished. She might feel concave. She might feel a void. But just like the moon, which it, sometimes it looks like it's whole, and sometimes you could only see a little part of it, the moon is always whole. Even though we can't see its totality, we can know today, thank God, with the science that we have, we know that the moon is always whole. It's just a matter of what part of the moon we could see and when. And the same holds true not just for the woman, but for our nation in general. And so sometimes we might seem like we are waxing, and sometimes it may seem like we are waning, and sometimes it seems like we disappeared completely. But the truth of the matter is, what the things that make us sometimes feel diminished, the things that make us sometimes feel like we're not complete and we're not whole, those are the very means by which we could achieve our greatest healing and our greatest abilities. What I mean by that, again, is we're going to use the woman as a start, but we're going to see even further. Well, we discussed, I think, the woman enough for us to understand that at a point when she feels that she is now empty and she is now diminished, that's the time we're going to start to count those 33 days where her body is doing what it needs to do to repair itself. Because as the body repairs itself, so too she begins to take her place in her new role as a mother. She is literally reinventing herself. And we don't just have it with the mother and the moon and the waxing and the waning. I believe that the Yom HaShemini, the Brit Milah instruction, is placed here specifically because it wants to speak to this same message. The same message at the time that you think you are imperfect, that's when you are your most perfect. And so the Torah is going to insert this here, because if we want to think about the first time that Brit Milah was mentioned in Torah, I had told you already, we would go all the way back to Avraham Avinu, and we would go all the way back, I'll give you a chapter and verse, we would go all the way back to chapter 17 in Bereshit. If we went to verse 1, Avraham is 99 years old. Hashem appears to him and he tells him, Ani El Shaddai, Hithalech Lefanai Veheye Tamim. Abraham, I want you to go before me and I want you to be perfect. Now, if you're Abraham in chapter 17 and you're first hearing that, what's the first question you might ask yourself? This is already in Lech Lecha. I already left my father's house and my mother's house. I went to the land that you told me to go to. I already had all of these encounters. I already was involved with the defeating of Sodom. I already had the Brit Ben Habet Harim. The truth is, God, you and me, we've been through a lot together. And I would have expected at this point that maybe I earned my stripes. Maybe the fact that you keep appearing to me and you keep speaking with me, maybe I would think, or maybe Avraham could be wondering, Hitalech lefanai veheye tamim, what have I been up until now, if not tamim? What do you mean? That means that up until now, I haven't been whole. Tam is whole, or perfect, or uncompromised. Tamim? What, and what do you want me to do to become Tamim, says Abraham. He doesn't say it, of course. God just tells him. What does he tell him? He says, I want you to keep my brit. And what is my brit going to be? My brit olam, forever. What is that brit olam going to be? Very easy. For you and your children after you, ve'et beriti asher tishmoru, keep, make sure you keep this covenant. Himol lachem kol zachar. Every male must be circumcised. Unimaltem. Make sure besar orlotechem. Make sure that the foreskin is removed. And this is going to be an ot brit. This is going to be the sign of the brit between you and me. Now, again, because we're so familiar with the Brit Milah and that whole process, we don't find this to be something unusual. But if we stop and think of it now in terms of Parashat Tazria, what is God telling Abraham? What you think is perfect, what you think is intact in your physical world, just because something is totally untampered with and hermetically sealed, so you think that that is perfect, let me tell you, says God, in my world, Tamim is the Brit Milah. Tamim is not necessarily things the way they came into the world in that status or in that manner, which means that now God is again saying, I want you to be perfectly imperfect. For us to start to take away from Parashat Tazria is there's a perfection in the imperfections. Whether it's the woman and the most impure thing that we could imagine, which would be blood, that's the most impure thing, God is calling it Dimei Tahara. The blood is blood of perfection. Why? Because if it's blood that's associated with growing, with reinventing ourselves, then that is what God is going to call perfect. As a matter of fact, even Rivka is the first person who has the closest thing to a sonogram that I could imagine. Remember her story. She has Vayitrotzitzu Habanim Bekirba. She becomes pregnant and these children are moving around in her kirba, in her kerev, in her kishkis, they might say, literally in her most innermost parts. And what does God, what does she do? Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. She goes to seek out God. And what does God do? God comes back and he responds to her. And if you're following, it's in Parashat Toldot. And you can see verse 22. Vayitrotzitzu habanim bekirba. And she says, Imken, if these children are this mobile or moving around or running inside of me, her question is, Im ken, lama ze anochi. I know we often think to ourselves that she is looking for answers about her unborn children, but what she really wanted to do was find out some information about herself. She asks the question, lama ze anochi, what's my role in all of this? Vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. I love this verse because she has no qualms about going directly to God. I know the commentaries say that she goes to the yeshiva of Shem Va'eved, and I know there's a lot to be said about how she goes about getting her information, but the Torah is so generous by saying a few things. One, of course, that a woman has the right to call God, call upon him, question him, and engage with God directly. That, to me, is one of my most favorite pieces. But another beautiful part is the next verse is that when she goes to engage with God, Lidrosh et Hashem, the next two words are Vayomer Hashem La, that God responds to her. But even as beautiful as this concept is, where the woman reaches out to God and God directly answers her, is that there's a sensitivity to the woman who is, I'm going to use the term hormonal for lack of a better word, for the woman who is undergoing some kind of emotional distress. And God answers her and he tells her, listen, you have two goyim bebitnech, you are carrying two children. But then we always focus on the two children and which one's going to be greater and which one's not going to be greater and Rav Yavod Zair. Today I'd like to focus on these words. Because I always said, what is God telling her? If her question is, where do I fit into this whole story? You know what God answers her? I never had seen these words, but he tells her, Shne le'umim mime'ayich yeparedu. We usually focus on the fact that they're going to be Shnei Le'umim, two great nations. I want to focus today on the part of Mime'ayich Yeparedun. They are going to be separate and apart from you. Maybe what God is telling Rivka is what he's telling every pregnant woman. You're undergoing hormonal overload right now. You ain't seen nothing yet. Because when you give birth, Shnei Le'umim, yes, they are going to be two, but I want you to focus on this. Mime'ayich yeparedun. They are going to become separate from you. And it's something that maybe we don't think about physically, that the woman feels to a certain extent whole. Literally, look at her belly. It looks like a moon. She's whole as can be. And then after she gives birth, there's this yiparedu. There's this idea that now she isn't as whole or she isn't as full. And God is speaking to her and he's telling her, this is the way of the world. Mime ayich yiparedu. They will separate themselves from you. But what's going to happen to you? I'm speaking to you to show you, you're still going to be whole. You're just going to be different. And with this kind of introduction for Parashat Tazria, where we have addition by subtraction, where there's a loss, but there's also a new kind of gain, there's a new way to move forward, we're going to be introduced. And by the way, after this, they keep calling it Yemei Tahara, Yemei Tahara, Yemei Tahara. After the first 7 days, her time, her 33 days or her 66 days are days of purity. And with that introduction, I'd like to look at these, what comes right after this. I don't think this is a cobbling or a compiling of all the unpleasant subjects, stick them all in one parasha and get it over with and we'll move on. I think they feed off each other so beautifully, because the next thing we're going to talk about, and again, I'm sorry if this is more gory than I would like, but we're going to be talking about all of these skin ailments that a person would get on his skin. So if a person would have se'et or sapachat or baheret, in some kind of a form of tzara'at. Again, the English word for tzara'at is very difficult. I don't know that we have tzara'at today. People call it leprosy, but leprosy was a physical malady, and tzara'at is a spiritual malady. So for those of you who don't speak Hebrew, please bear with me. I'm going to try and use the word tzara'at because I believe it is more of an accurate term for what we want to discuss. And again, I'm the last one who wants to talk about tzara'at, but I think there are some beautiful things for us to gain from what's taking place here. And I'll first prove that tzara'at is something spiritual because the person who is afflicted with it, in verse 2, it says, Vehuva el Aharon HaKohen, or el Echad mibnei HaKohanim. What has to happen? If a person has this affliction, he is brought, not to the doctor, he's brought to the priest. He's brought to the spiritual leader. Why would you bring the afflicted, sick person to the spiritual leader? It's because what he's afflicted with is by nature spiritual. And there was a very interesting way that people would handle this thing called tzara'at. We know that it came in stages. Tzara'at would first come on the house, then on the clothing, then on the body. It was God's warning signals to say, I need you to be aware, I need you to focus on certain elements of your character, of your mindset. And the first warning is, I'm not going to allow it to affect you on your body. It's going to come on the walls of your home. Next, if you don't hearken to those signs, then it will come on your clothing. And if you ignore those signs, like most illnesses, if you ignore the signs, the symptoms worsen until you're forced to react to them. And that would be the final case where the tzara'at is actually on the body. It's very interesting to note that if a person would see tzara'at on their house, they would take all the furniture out of the house. I mean, you could picture the scene. The front lawn has the person's belongings all strewn about. You're picturing a yard sale, but it was really pretty embarrassing, because you're taking everything that's on the inside and you're putting it on the outside. It was exposing. You're now totally on display. We're squeamish if we see people hanging their laundry out. I don't want to see their laundry. Here, imagine everything in your house got taken out. And what was the purpose? Why would people take things out of their house? The understanding was that once the Kohen comes and he deems the house impure, then all of its contents are also impure. It sounds like it's a little bit of a loophole where we're taking the stuff out before the Kohen says, that's it, you're quarantined, everything that's in the house has to stay and nobody could use it, because if you bring it out, it has the ability to contaminate. Here, we're doing the opposite. We're taking everything out before he gets there, before the inspector comes. We put everything on the front lawn in case he says, Tameh, then at least we still have a couch to sit on, even though it's in our garden. What really the Torah is telling us is really such a fascinating thing. It's, first of all, these skin lesions, or whatever you want to call tzara'at, are they physical or are they metaphysical? And of course, I'm going to say they're both. They're physical in the sense that you can actually see them, and the Kohen could come and determine their color, their size, their shape, and he could make a diagnosis, a physical diagnosis on them. But at the same time, the cure is totally not within the realm of any kind of medicine that anybody's ever practiced, because the way to cure or to heal the tzara'at would be to have the person who is infected leave the camp for 7 days. And now we start to ask ourselves all these questions. Why would that be a cure for tzara'at? So we have to really see, how does the tzara'at come in the first place? So there is this nice acronym that we've learned from the rabbis. They say mitzora stands for motzi shem ra. That somebody who gets tzara'at is somebody who had spoken, we'll use the phrase lashon hara, who had spoken poorly or improperly. And unfortunately for Miriam, she is a person who is very much associated with this concept of tzara'at, because she herself gets tzara'at. So in Sefer Bemidbar, at the end of Parashat Behalotcha, if you'd like to follow along in the Chumash, otherwise I can tell you what's taking place. At the end of Parashat Behalotcha, we have this famous story, and that is in chapter 12, verse 1 of Bemidbar. Vatedaber Miriam ve'Aaron, Miriam and Aaron speak about Moshe, about this Alodot, Haisha HaKushit Asher Lakach, about this woman, this Kushit woman that Moshe had taken, Ki Isha Kushit Lakach, because he took a woman who was Kushit. And then they go and they say, so first of all, the first thing that we'll say is, it's improper for one person to be speaking about another person's marital affairs. And just for full disclosure, the commentaries come and say that what was so terrible was that they were discussing how Moshe wasn't giving as much attention to his wife because he was so busy being a prophet. That would be completely inappropriate, but that's part of the Midrash, just in case you wanted to fill in a couple of blanks. But that's not where I'm going to go today. I personally think that the problem were the next few words. Vayomru, what did they say? Harak ach b'Moshe diber Hashem? What, did God only speak with Moshe? Halo gambanu, didn't he speak with us as well? Halo gambanu diber, didn't he also speak with us? Vayishma Hashem. And this is what God heard. What did God hear? That they asked, oh, did God only appear to Moshe, or didn't he speak with us as well? What was so terrible about the statement? And I will tell you, what's so terrible about this statement is the same exact thing that's at the root of the tzara'at, which is why. What brings a person, because why do they say Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe? What was that? What's the idea of Lashon Hara? What she did was she compared herself to Moshe. That's it. Miriam, let's just say one thing in all fairness. I am a huge Miriam fan. I can't say enough beautiful things about Miriam. If I tell you from the days that she convinced her father to have the baby, if you want to go with those midrashim, to the fact that she takes him and puts him by the Ye'od, and she ingeniously tells the daughter of Paro that she'll bring a nursemaid, and she brings her own mother and gets paid for it, to the bringing of the tambourines, to the singing after the sea splits, to the water being ascribed to her. I mean, there's not enough things you could say about Miriam. The woman is in, especially at that time, there was no woman that had higher prophecy than Miriam. She was Miriam HaNevi'ah. She was Miriam the prophetess. And so I am not in any way here to say, oh, Miriam, she spoke improperly or whatever. I think we use Miriam because she was so fantastic. But even something as simple as comparing oneself to one's sibling could cause, and that's what we have in this, why, this is why we came here. Vehine Miriam, in verse 10, Mitzora'at Kashaleg. God causes Miriam to get Sara'at, white like snow. What is going on? Is Miriam being punished for comparing herself to Moshe? Well, maybe we have to ask the question, and that is, what's so terrible about comparisons? And comparisons in Torah are one of the most dangerous things in the world. Let's go through the first comparison that I could think of. Of course, I go there often, so you're probably on the same page as me. If we just went to Cain and Hevel, what happened with those siblings? Cain's gonna compare himself and say, what? Hevel's offering was accepted and mine wasn't. Now, a person who's gonna compare in that way probably already did the math and compared the opposite way, saying, what? Marvelous me, I'm the firstborn. Kaniti Ishet Hashem, I am the godchild. I am the first human being to be born from my mother. It's possible he was born whole. It's possible he was born like a man. It doesn't matter. If Cain was wearing a crown on his head that said, firstborn ever in the history of the world, I wouldn't be surprised. So when you're going to compare yourself and look down upon everybody else, it's going to be very hard when you then compare yourself to your brother Cain, and instead of being this great, big, marvelous, firstborn person, you're going to start to see yourself as what? As the rejected, the unaccepted child. And what does that do? Comparison, I think it was Theodore Roosevelt who said, comparison is the thief of joy. What does that mean? You will never be happy if you're going to compare. Comparing, if you look down on everybody else, in your comparison, you end up measuring. What does compare mean? Compare. To compare, the word pair, pare, on par, equal. If something's on par, that means that it's equal. That means that it measures up. That means that that thing is being validated. Compare, to compare, means that I want to see how I measure up. Who wants to see how they measure up? The person who needs validation. And so when you're going to compare, one of two things are going to happen. Either you're going to find yourself on the high side of the scale and you're going to become arrogant and you're going to think that you're much better than everybody else, or you're going to find that you're on the lacking end of the scale, and then you're going to feel that you're diminished and low self-esteem and all those other things that happen. And so what's taking place from the very beginning with Cain is, and it happens with the brothers of Yosef, and we can go on and on. Once you compare, you're already going down a very slippery slope. What happens with Miriam Bat is so magnificent, because I told you, she is the heroine of the Exodus story. So to walk away and say, oh, she's the poster child for Tzara'at, wouldn't sit well with anybody. So what does the Torah do for us? It's so magnificent. I'm back in Be'alotcha, chapter 12. What happens to her? First of all, Moshe says the prayer for her, a five-word prayer that we still invoke today, El Na Refana La. It's a succinct prayer for healing. It's to Moshe's credit that for his own sister, he composes a short prayer And he shows us that we don't need to have this lengthy recitation of words or incantations. He says, El Narefa Nala, God, you are capable of healing her. And obviously what she has is a spiritual ailment. So my request is that you repair her, please, now, the sooner the better. And what happens? It says, Shivat Yamim, or I'll go to verse 15, Vatesager Miriam Michutz Lamachaneh Shivat Yamim. What happens to Miriam? She's placed in quarantine for 7 days outside of the camp. And the word that's used for being placed in quarantine is Vatesager. So maybe we should take a minute and say, what is quarantine? It's a word that we've, unfortunately, from the coronavirus, now we know this word quarantine and we've experienced it. But the word quarantine, where does it come from? Cuarentena. Cuarentena, cuarenta. It's a good thing I speak a little Spanish. It's coming in useful today. Cuarenta means 40. This term, I believe, was coined in Venice when the ships would come to the port. They would force the sailors to stay on board for 40 days before allowing them to come ashore, because in that 40-day period, any diseases that they might be carrying from any other countries that they had been to would already be flushed through their system. I mean, we know when the boats came to Ellis Island, many people were placed in quarantine. But the word quarantine, now learning Parashat Tazria, quarantina, 40, 7 plus 33, 40. The Torah already had this understanding that it takes 40 days to reach, to go from a state of impurity to a place of purity. But it's not just 40 days, it's vatesaged. It's 40 days of being enclosed. And we may think of this term vatesaged as being locked up or cooped up, because again, we experienced it ourselves and it wasn't so pleasant to feel that we weren't allowed to leave our homes, that we were being contained. But if we actually noticed that very same word is used in Parashat Noach to describe his coming into the Teva, it's in chapter 7 in Bereshit. I know I'm taking you all over the place today, but hopefully we'll come for a landing soon. In chapter 7, verse 16, we have this idea that they all came, Zachar u'Nekeva, like El Perasha, the males and the females, they came exactly as Hashem had commanded. And then it says these words, Vayisgod Hashem ba'ado. And God sealed, taking license to say that he sealed the ark, ba'ado, for his sake. We start to get an understanding. Commentaries say beautiful things, of course. Noah himself would have had a hard time closing off the ark because he would have known that anybody on the other side of that door is not going to make it. Everybody outside the ark is going to perish. God had told it to him. So maybe this was a chesed of Hashem, that Hashem is coming and doing the closing of the door, ba'ado, for Noach's sake, so Noach doesn't have to feel like he himself is sailing away and leaving everybody else to perish. But when it says, vayisgod Hashem ba'ado, maybe we can just take it out of that particular context of the ark, and saying that when God closes somebody off, it's ba'ado, it's for their sake. And when Miriam, for instance, is going to be closed off, vatesaged, she's going to be closed off because it's for her sake and it's for her own good. And what does that mean? When a person is closed off, when a person is placed outside the machaneh, they're isolated, they're on their own, and I always say this, they're not intended to be by themselves. The intent is for them to be with themselves, for them to be able to hear their own inner voice. The power of the pause. It's a very big deal, this concept of the power of the pause. It's often used in parenting, in anger management. If somebody were to react without pause, the results might be devastating. But the power of the pause means if we only took a minute, a couple of seconds to consider and reconsider what we're thinking and what we're doing, we would react way more intelligently. And so when we see this concept that the person is being closed or being isolated so that they could have time to think, so they could be with themselves, what's also happening is if the ailment came about because they compared themselves with other people, well, now you're not with other people. Now you can't compare yourself. You could only compare yourself to one person. And that one person is you. And when you compare yourself to you, we're hoping that A, you see your greatness, B, you see your potential, and C, you ask yourself, to what extent am I utilizing my greatness to achieve my potential? And those comparisons might be scary because you may say I'm capable of 2000x and I'm only outputting 7x. And so in this time of isolation where it's only you speaking to yourself, the questions should sound something along the lines of, what can I do to maximize my gifts and my greatness? And these things take me away from comparing myself to outside people and lead me towards comparing myself to my best self. And then those are the things that are going to bring health. Those are the things that are going to bring healing. Those are the things that are going to bring wholeness. You know, today, one of the biggest things that people are talking about, there's a huge mental health crisis out there, and it's mostly affecting teenage girls. And what are they doing? They're on their phones and they're constantly scrolling and they're comparing and they're seeing all these gorgeous people, and they don't realize that the images that they're seeing are actually curated or photoshopped or manufactured in a way for every person to look. I always say this, they look their best. Nobody has a pimple, nobody's bloated, nobody's depressed, nobody has a bad hair day. When they are on social media, somehow nobody has a hair out of place. Nobody has broccoli in their tooth. They're perfect to as perfect as can be. And it's a problem because the power of the pause means if somebody or these anybody, ourselves included, if we were just to stop and pause and consider and ask ourselves, are these people who I should be comparing myself to? Should I even be comparing myself at all? And are these images even remotely reflecting reality? I mean, I'm using the term of teenage girls because I feel like it's a demographic that we could relate to, but yet it's not so close to home for some of us who aren't teenagers anymore. But the reality is, if Miriam could get Sara'at, that means that comparison is a trap that any person could fall into at any point. I'm going to give you one more example so that we start to understand that what's out there in the world, the temptation that is luring us, that is pulling us, this is the whole, by the way, this is the whole Pesach story, standing on one foot, is if we went to back in Bereshit one more place. I'm sorry, I know it's a lot of flipping of pages today, but I'd like you to see these things for yourselves because I think it's so important. So at the in chapter 19, I'll go to verse 5 just to save time. We're in Sodom. He brings the angels into his house, which is a criminal offense in that city, in Sodom. So the people come, they call out to Lot. They said, Ayeha Anashim, where are these men that came to your house tonight? Send them to us. Vayetzu alehem Lot hapet. Vayetze alehem, and Lot goes out to them, hapetka, to the doorway. Vehadelet sagar acharav. So here you have the scene. The people or the angels are inside the house. Lot is on the threshold. The door is closed behind him. There is that hadelet sagar acharav. What is this depicting for us? Same thing it was depicting for us in the Ark of Noah. Everything inside the closed door was safe. Everything outside the closed door was vulnerable. And so now what happens is Lot is in a vulnerable position. Vizagar acharav. The door is closed behind him. And what happens? This is one of the most midah keneged midah. What do they call that? The measure for measure? Why or what is going to cause the people of Sodom, what's driving, what's at the root? Why do they not want foreigners? Why do they not want guests? Why do they not want to be hospitable? They don't want anybody to take what they have. You know what that's called? When somebody sees what somebody else has and wants it, there's one word for that. Envy. And since we're having a day of etymology, may as well go for the gold. Do you know what envy is? You know what envidia? Again, that Spanish comes in very, very handy. Envious. You know what envidia means? You know what vidya means? Video. Video is what? To see. Envidia means the inability to see. A person who is envious, what happens to them is their sense of sight, their ability to see and perceive is taken away from them. How do I know this? Because what exactly happens to the people of Sodom? The people of Sodom don't want to share. They don't want anybody to have what they have. And so what is their punishment? Hashem gives them tsanverim, the inability to see. This is a perfect ailment. But to add on top of that, what happens? The men that are inside, those angels that are here called men, Vayishlechu ha'anashim, in verse 10, they send out their hands, they bring Lot into the house to them. And what does it say? Ve'et hadelet sagaru. They close the door, meaning the ones that are enclosed, the ones that are isolated, the ones that are sealed with the door closed are the ones who are actually safe. And the next verse says, but the Anashim, the men who were Petach HaBayit, what happened to those people? Hiku basanverim. They had this ailment where they couldn't see. So let's go back to our original point, and hopefully start to bring things together. And that is that the Torah is giving us a very clear picture. And it's telling us, you think that imperfections make you unwhole? They don't. They are means for your wholeness. Whether it's, like we said, a person in mourning or a woman that gave birth, even if we're talking about a person who has tzara'at. Why? Because their impurity is forcing them to leave the machaneh. But at the very same time, it's an avenue for them to become greater than they ever were. Meaning, it's actually a chesed, it's actually a gift. Could we get to the point where we see that physical ailments could actually be a gift, a means by which we could grow, by which we could reinvent ourselves? Yes, says God, if we take the time and we enclose ourselves, and in the time that we enclose ourselves, we use the power of the pause, and we reflect, and we recognize that we don't need to compare ourselves to anybody else, that we already have what we need for us to become our greatest selves. If we already realize that maybe what the world is showing us and tempting us are versions of perfection that are nowhere close to reality, if we start to see that the sagad, that the enclosing, is for our safety and for our healing and for our benefit, then we will even take something as uncomfortable as tzara'at and say, everything that God brings into this world is here to serve a purpose, and it's all good. It may not seem good, these baheretz and these all of these words that are so uncomfortable, sapachat and se'et, all of these words that sound so unappealing are really ways for Hashem to say, I am here, I am with you. And same, I'll just end with this, the same way that the moon may seem like it's here, may seem like it's not, you can't see the whole thing. It's on very rare occasions that we could see the entire moon. We see it every Rosh Chodesh. This year, we were fortunate enough to see it backlit. We were able to see it even eclipsing the sun. That's our gift. The gift of the Jewish people is that we are always whole. We may not always see it. We may not always feel it. We may not always seem it. But God is saying, you are always whole. And I am always in the picture. And even when you're undergoing ailments, those ailments, and please Hashem, let these troubles and tzarot that we're going through right now, let those be like the tzara'at, that once we are done with it and we are rid from it. You know what the person who's the metzorah does when he's finished with his 7-day cycle? If the kohen deems him cured, he goes into a water, he goes into a mikveh, he cleanses himself, he washes his clothes, and what happens to him? His hair is all shaved from him. You know, he's literally bald and goes into the water and he comes out. And the idea behind that is he emerges from the living waters like a newborn baby, like the child that came from the womb, like the child that emerged from the amniotic fluids. That's what we have. God gave us this gift to become rebirthed. Yes, there's pain on the way, but there is a birthing, and this, I believe, and we're learning this at this time, this is for us a hope that our nation will get through this pain, and we will go through the waters, and we will be cleansed, and we will be birthed again. And when we are, we will be smarter, we will be stronger, we will be holier, and we will be even more whole. And that's a healing that the parasha is offering us, that I hope and pray for our nation and every single one of us. So thank you for joining. I'm hoping next week to be able to learn together again, but stay tuned and have a beautiful week.